Welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So get yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin.
I heard in Addison's Walk a bird sing clear. This year, the summer will come true. This year, this year. Winds will not strip the blossom from the apple trees this year, nor want of rain destroy the peas. This year, time's nature will no more defeat you, nor all the promised moments in their passing cheat you. This time they will not lead you round and back to autumn, one year older by the well-worn track. This year, this year, as all these flowers foretell, we shall escape the circle and undo the spell. Often deceived, yet open once again your heart. Quick, 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 quick. The gates are drawn apart. C.S. Lewis, What the Bird Said Early in the Year.
So teach us to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. Psalm 90:12. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to Speaking with Joy, and a very happy new year to you all. Now, as you may have noticed, I have a very special guest with me this time to welcome you in, and that is Joel, my brother. Say hello, Joel.
Hello, everyone.
So, as I think I've talked about in the podcast, but I can't remember, Joel and I live together in Scotland, and Joel is doing a master at the Institute of Theology, Imagination, and the Arts, and he is a great brother, a great roommate, and a great friend. And one of the, do you want to talk, tell him a little about Two Benedictions? We do that together.
Sure. Yeah. So Joy and I, I guess 3 years ago now, mm-hmm. sort of came back from crazy life in various corners of the world and realized that we had both sort of enjoyed writing songs as a way to think about our world and to articulate it and to sort of breathe our imagination back into it, and that we wanted to try to do it together. So we started writing songs together and performing, and lo and behold, the two benedictions came forth from that.
Yes, so the long and short of that is that Joel and I have always loved doing music together, and so we do that sometimes, and so our days in Scotland are filled with eating and studying and playing music together. So today I have Joel with me because I knew that he had a particular expertise in what we're going to talk about today, specifically with one of the pieces of art. And today our discussion topic is going to be technology and time. Now, I've been thinking a lot about time because we have just entered into a new year, as I'm sure we're all thinking about. And that connects with me to technology in a funny way. I thought about this because I opened my Facebook and it wished me a happy new year, which was a really odd experience. And then it led me back to that little button that has the on this day feature, where it goes back and it sees all of the, you know, what's happened on this particular day. And I kind of get a kick out of those, slash I also sometimes am embarrassed because I look back and I'm like, why did my 14-year-old self feel a need to share what I was having for lunch? But it's really interesting to have that kind of combination of technology and how we experience time and what it means for us to have this kind of constant catalog of our life and our memories and our stories in a semi-public place. And it's a really interesting thing. But I've been getting to thinking about how that, even that small thing, you know, going on Facebook and seeing those on this day and being wished Happy New Year, how the experience of technology shapes my experience of time, and in turn, how that shapes how I live in time. So that led me to kind of investigate and start thinking about how technology shapes our experience of time and how that experience shapes how we live. So today, that will be our discussion topic, and Joel will be diving in with me and adding his very insightful thoughts. It'll be just like an hour in our living room, honestly. This is a pretty normal day for us. So we'll be, as usual, having our three pieces of art, and the first we'll do is visual. We'll be looking at the medieval calendars, and then at literary, we'll be looking at the book The Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And then finally, in Joel's expertise, because he's done some writing and research on this, we'll be talking about the Arcade Fire's song, We Used to Wait. So, without further ado, let us dive in and think about how technology shapes our experience of time and the way we live. So, I thought I would start with a kind of ancient example, not ancient, but an older example that helps provide like a contrast to how we experience time now with technology. And that is the medieval calendar. So I have a lot of these linked on the blog, but a medieval calendar was kind of the way, there's many different kinds of them. They have them in clocks, they have them in books, but it was how they kind of tracked time in the medieval era. And what's really interesting to me is to kind of look into it. So I'll first describe kind of what it is to you. So generally speaking, you would have either a book, usually you'd have a book and also like a visual thing that you'd have in the church that would mark each month of the year. And they're beautiful, vivid colors. Each month is represented by kind of an image. And the images are attached to this idea of the labors of the month. So I have some of these written down. But you have some of the labors of the month are things like January, the labor is feasting, which I am very down for.
Inappropriate.
Yes, and we in the Clarkson house have been doing nothing but that since we've been home.
Indeed.
So I am a fattened calf, hoping that no one will eat me. And then February, the labor is sitting by the fire. And then March, the labor is digging trees. And there's this kind of, so these are all represented in these kind of whimsical, interesting images. But there was this idea that every month is associated with a something that you were supposed to do. But in addition to that, you also had month by month, the days would be written out in a book, and they would have all of the important days of the month. And so in the old Catholic calendars, and this is still true, they had every single day is associated with a saint. So all 365 days were associated with a saint. And, but then the particularly important saints would have a red letter day. So that would be on your little book where you had the month of December and you saw each day was associated with which saint was on it. You would have the important saints be highlighted in red. And that is actually where we get the phrase a red letter day, which just means a very important, notable day.
Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of to describe it for you. But basically there was a sense that every month had a meaning and a purpose and something you're supposed to do with it. And it was, and then you had this kind of association with community and with church life and the things you were celebrating. But then this was also very tied in with nature. So each of the, you know, the feasts and the labors had to do a lot of times with kind of an agrarian lifestyle of farming and, you know, what everybody was kind of, what stage they were at in whatever production of, whether they were farmers or, you know, leather people or whatever. What's the word for leather people?
Yeah, leather workers.
Oh my gosh, there's definitely a word for that, but I cannot think what it is.
Two of
milliner,
us
milliner, nope, that's a hat maker.
Yep. By the end of it, we'll know.
I don't guess that the weather really affects hat making all that much, but it probably does affect what kind of hats you need to
that
make.
That is correct.
So anyway, yes. So just to pull this out, and then I'm going to ask Joel some of his thoughts. Basically, this, so as I was saying, it's really tied in with the seasons, which also kind of connects to, in an ancient way we would think of this, but their experience of technology, because thinking of technology as tools that help us kind of master our world. That was their technology for telling time and telling the seasons and all that. So I wanted to pull out three kind of ways that these calendars shaped their experience of time, and just to kind of talk about and think through. So the first is that they experience time as circular. So if you look at a lot of these calendars, Joel's looking at one with me, they are actually like written out as a circle, like a clock. And oftentimes they would be on clock towers. And that was based around the idea that the seasons come back every year. And you know, every year there's this process of death in the winter that leads to a slow and burgeoning life of spring, and then that leads to harvesting and work, and then that leads to enjoying your harvest and then everything dying again. So there's a sense of time being circular and having returning patterns, but that circularity also connected to the idea of eventual hope, because there was this idea that, you know, even though in life we experience this circularness, you know, that we will die, eventually we'll get old, but that spring represented eternity. So it was circular and also pointed towards hope.
And maybe even there's a relationship between the way that we think about time's relationship to eternity now, and the way that a medieval person would have thought about it as a circular sort of thing. It's they would have seen a strong connectivity between heaven and earth, and they would have seen the way that earth has this sort of circular motion. They wouldn't have seen that as out of sync with sort of an eternal reality. They would have seen it as very much in sync. They wouldn't have seen heaven in a linear way. They would have thought of it, or they would have sort of imagined the heavenly realities in a sort of concentric sort of way. And you see this in mm-hmm. books like Dante's La Commedia, the way that he thinks about hell and heaven in these circles. Yeah. You know, he has all of this sort of built into his notion of
yes, reality. Medievals were all about circles. And that comes into with this idea that heaven and like eternity is not like a we are not in eternity now and someday we'll be in eternity. There was this sense of like the circular pattern of life of death and resurrection is participating in eternity that we will eventually be fully realized, but it's not something that's separated.
Yeah.
Okay, so the second thing that so we have time was circular for them, and that was an experience brought around by the calendars in that experience. So the second thing was that time was communal. So, like I was saying earlier, because you had these kind of these communities that were very, basically everything was kind of determined by the seasons and by the church, and so because of that, there was this experience of everybody kind of knows what's happening. The feasts that everyone has, everyone celebrates together. We are all attached, and you can kind of know what your neighbor is about mm-hmm. Because time and months and days are something we all share together. You know, you don't. There's not this sense of like, well, you'll get time off when your company tells you can get time off. You know, that's right. Kind of my experience. When I come home, it's like, oh, some of my friends aren't off because their school hasn't been. No, everyone was connected to this sense of rhythm and time, and it was communal, and it was shared.
So when you think about, we'll probably come back to this later on as well, but when you think it back to memory with someone, you wouldn't have necessarily thought about the time it was, but about the sort of place it was, or the sort mm-hmm. of experience you had within a given season, because it would have, I wonder if there would have been more of a sense of, oh, this recalls to me that kind of season that I continue to experience year to year.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, because I think we still have those sorts of seasons, they're just fewer and less shared. So, you know, we still have things like, whether or not you celebrate Christmas, everyone kind of has this sense of, like, there's a section of time in which most people will be celebrating, whether that's Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever. But it's not as embedded in culturally and as, So the final thing is, we've talked about how time was circular and communal. And the final thing was that it was meaningful. And that just really goes along with this, you know, everything we've already been talking about. The sense that time in its passage, in its rhythms, that there were times that mean things. But not just that there were times that meant things. So like I was saying, you have kind of Christmas mm-hmm. around that season. Everybody kind of knows it's a time of feasting for us. Mm-hmm. But that every time meant something. Every time had a day that was a saint's day. Every, you know, there was this sense of, every month has a labor you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. There's this sense of time, and the passage of time is never empty. It's burdened with meaning and with celebration and with community.
And part of that meaning is a pattern of return, which means mm-hmm. that, especially thinking about, for instance, the church year, which is mm-hmm. one of many ways of thinking about time mm-hmm. in a medieval mindset, you have seasons which are, as we are currently in right now, where I think we're, are we still in Christmastide? I think we're still in Christmastide.
Yeah.
which is a feasting season. You know, this is a season for really enjoying and being together. And this would have been a sense that it wasn't just sort of a haphazard thing. Yeah. And it was also something you knew you would return to in a way that you had experienced in the past.
Yeah. And that's something everybody shared. And yes. Right. Something else that I'm just going to tack on the end here is that medieval time was very kind of reconciled to the idea that you would die, because that was bound up in the rhythms. That was bound up in the idea of there's a time for blossoming and then there is a time for winding down and for dying. But in that was tied in this idea of hope and redemption. But that kind of the objectivity of time that they experienced of like, well, this is what time means. This is how we experience it. And the birth and the dying, that just kind of made death and resurrection facts that they accepted.
Because it was something they would practice rhythmically every single year, death and rebirth.
Yeah, every year you have Lent, every year you have Easter.
Right.
So, okay, so that's kind of our, and you could see how that ties in this experience of time, how they tracked it with their kind of medieval technology. Now we're going to move to a very different sort of experience of time, and that is in The Brave New World by Huxley. Now, this is not a book for little audiences, it's definitely got some disturbing bits and some more mature content, so just keep that in mind, but it's one of the most, I think it's probably one of the most important books to read to kind of think about culture and society and the kind of how technology can both make life easier, but also steal some of our experiences of humanity. So just to give you a little background, this takes place in a dystopian future where there has been this great catastrophe that's made everyone afraid enough that they're willing to, like, kind of bow to the government. And the government has divided everyone into these classes. And nobody's hungry. Nobody has needs. But they're all divided into these classes. And instead of people having parents anymore, because they say that causes all these issues, they kind of grow these test tube babies. But everyone, it's kind of this, everything's controlled, you know. You never have to wait. Now, there's a lot that could be talked about in this. Like, there's so much political, societal, whatever. What I want to pull out today is this element of technology and time and how that's kind of talked about and manipulated. Because when I read that, and Joel and I both read this year, I don't know how I missed it earlier, but I did.
It's one of the, I think everybody misses at least, like, one of
the books you're supposed to read. I think I've missed more than one.
Probably.
But what stuck out to me and what I want to talk about particularly is the way that it portrays how technology impacts their experience of time. And this is kind of what I'll say about that. In the Brave New World, everything is convenient and nothing needs to be waited for. So in the world state, which is what this new kind of reimagined dystopian London is, all the demands and effects of time have been pretty much eliminated. Children are incubated in a lab, so no woman has to wait for the patient months of pregnancy. Everyone is sterile. Nobody has children. There are no practical ramifications for promiscuity. And they kind of, like, they have this idea of perpetual youth so that when people start to grow old, they do as much as they can to eliminate the effects of age. And then once they get beyond that, they kill old people. And that's a part of the society, which is many other things you could talk about there. Yeah. But the general idea is that they've tried to kind of do away with the impacts of time. And that kind of links back into the poem I had Joel read earlier with the one of the lines that always catches me, and it's by C.S. Lewis, when he says, time's nature will no more defeat you, nor all the promised moments in their passing cheat you. And there is this experience of being a human that we feel like time can sometimes be the enemy. It's the thing that's chasing us. We don't have enough time to live, to get things done. You know, that death is coming closer. And so in this world, rather than saying the summer has come true and there's this eternity that's kind of like presented as the hope in the medieval calendars, they've just tried to conquer time by meaning that we never have to wait. We never have to experience age. We never have to experience the fact that we're not in control of time.
And interestingly enough, you know, they are able, in a sense, and you begin to realize this very early on in the book, to eliminate need.
Mm-hmm.
They're not able to eliminate desire. And it's that desire which connects people to sort of a chronology, because with that desire, you're constantly looking forward to what comes next. So what they actually have to do is, there's a lot of sedation in the book to create this sense of, as you say, sort of never-ending happiness. They actually have to not just technologically provide everything, but actually sedate people, keep them from being able to arise into a full awareness of reality.
Yes, and that is particularly kind of like drawn out and pointed out by this character, John. So Bernard and Lenina, is that her name?
I think so.
It's a little Leninism.
Yes, right.
So they go to this place that's called the Reservation, and it's where the people who haven't lived in the Brave New World are. And they meet this fellow named John, and John has not lived in the Brave New World, so he is not formed by it. And so he goes back to the Brave New World, and he's grown up being religious and living in nature and reading Shakespeare, and everything in him is at odds with this world. But the things that are at odds in him are oftentimes this experience of wanting to wait. And there's this really interesting kind of juxtaposition between John and Bernard, because Bernard is kind of in this relationship with Lenina, and he says that that not needing to wait, whether that's for, you know, engaging in certain things, he says, I wish that we had waited, for we are acting like children. So the idea is that this whole society has made people who aren't able to wait. They're always just on for self-gratification, but the gratification means that they don't experience that desire that's so inherent in human nature. That's, like, really deeply important. So, like, and so what John points out is that basically they've eliminated all the truly human experiences, from love, which, you know, I was talking to Joel about this earlier, and then I want you to chip in. But I was talking about how love, you know, if you've ever had the experience of falling in love, part of the magic of it is, you know, waiting for when will be the next time I'll see someone, or when you write them and wondering if they're going to write you back. But that depends upon this kind of this patience and this experience of looking forward and waiting and knowing that you are kind of subject to time, and that, but that that's not a bad part. That's what makes it. And then like birth, that, you know, that a part of the beauty of making a new human is that you have these 9 months of it being knit together in your womb and anticipating that and waiting for that. And I wrote about that this week in my blog, that that the waiting is not a bad thing. It's a part of the magic of what makes these experiences human.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, you know, going back to the calendars and how those calendars have what you could call a liturgy, which is basically just a rhythm, which sort of drives these things forward, an ordered rhythm, which drives these things forward. Part of, again, what you're saying about the magic, you thinking about these characters in the book, what they really long for is communion, you know, not just consummation, not just sort of like...
But to be with, to know.
Yeah, to know.
That and really human desire to be drawn into, relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And in the sort of the traditional Christian service of worship that many of us would experience on a given Sunday, communion's at the very end of the service. It's something which is prepared.
You wait for,
yeah, you're sort of kept in suspense the entire time. You're prepared and you're shaped and you're grown and you're moved towards it, so that when you finally have it, it actually has a more profound meaning, you know?
Yeah, totally. So I think that's kind of what stuck out to me in this book, is that in the Brave New World, they have conquered time in the sense of they don't need to wait for anything. Yeah. They're not subject to time. Like the medievals are totally subject to time. Every month, every moment, every day is telling them how they ought to live their lives.
Right.
In the Brave New World, no one is subject to time. But because of that, they've kind of lost all the essentially human things, whether that's love in a marriage or birth or longing for something beyond ourselves that we have to wait for, and that sense of anticipation. And that's kind of represented in this character, John. And to me, I think that... I don't know about you, but I think on a daily basis, my experience of time is probably closer to a Brave New World than it is to medieval. And that's not, I don't want to just glorify, I'm not saying like, oh, we should all just go back to medievals at all. And you know, there's a lot of things about, and this is kind of what Brave New World makes point of too, there's a lot of things about technology and that conquering of time that I like. I like that I can do a podcast. I like that when I'm overseas, I can Skype people. And there's that kind of elimination of time. That is good. But there's also that kind of question for me of how else am I engaging in technology that it's taking away those essentially human experiences? And how can I be conscious about kind of not letting technology make my days meaningless?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that, Joel?
I think, yeah, you're right. I think, you know, it is, the question is not whether technology can or can't be useful. I think it's in part... you know, it's often said it's how we use it. And I think it's, for me, it's as much how we don't use it as is how we do use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's how we create a sense of distance. If we could have technology in one of two ways, and I think it's becoming more and more difficult if there's the sense in which the material and sort of the almost like, I won't say spiritual, but sort of that technological world we're all beginning to live in, there's no distance between it. And only if we create the distance is there a distance. Only if we sort of put a distance between us and it do we recognize sort of the space there.
Well, I think it's just a big part of it is learning. I think that technology tries to master time, but then we sometimes let technology master us.
Yeah.
So the question is not, you know, whether or not technology is useful. Of course it is. The question is, are we letting it master us? Are we letting it master our experience of time?
Yeah.
So how do we kind of put that space and that be conscious of that?
Well, and I wonder, thinking about the sense of instant gratification that you're talking about from the Brave New World, if part of what technology does is that it sort of like hammers out any of the wrinkles in the circular sense and tries to make it linear, because if you don't have a sense of the circular, you no longer have a hope of expectation of returning to something.
Exactly.
So you
That's
need
so true.
That gratification.
Yeah, because in the Brave New World, you don't have that experience of seasons, so you don't have that idea in your mind of the spring that comes back.
Yeah. Right.
There's
no return.
So you have to
bring it, you have to make it in your moment.
Yeah, and so like when you think back on those things I talked about earlier, the circularness of time, That's not in the Brave New World.
Not at all.
The communal aspects of time. No one is bonded around this sense of, like, things that you all do together and this kind of, like, celebrations and feastings and fastings. There's no sense of community.
No sense of need.
Yeah, no sense of need. And no sense of connection to nature either. It's really a disembodied thing. It's like, you, and it's disembodied too when you think about the fact that, like, none of them do this most human, earthy, fleshy thing, which is, like, actually having babies. Like,
yeah,
it's
right.
totally separated from that.
Right, right.
And then finally that it's not meaningful.
Yeah.
There's no meaning in time. It's just kind of an on and on-ness. It's like a misery of a dream.
And any also, time... Yeah, go ahead.
I would say, I think if I'm remembering right, Soma, the drug they take to
yeah.
be... to be kind of sedated, has the effect of they forget time.
They do. They forget
Which
that.
I think is really actually symbolic.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. It's super weird book, super great. You should definitely
yeah.
read it to understand society.
Yep.
Yes.
Come out of it feeling like you're in a vortex and you'll need a few days to recover, but...
Yes. So now, okay, we're going to move to our last one, which I think that this example kind of, you know, we have this medieval example which sees time as... totally meaningful and communal, and then we have Brave New World, which makes it this totally kind of alien thing that nobody experiences together, and that's kind of erased. So what I wanted to bring the final conversation down to is, in our world, how do we choose to live lives where waiting is important? Because like I was saying earlier, I think that something that we need to learn to embrace, and this is something I'm learning to embrace in my life, is that waiting is not a punishment. Waiting is a part of the magic of becoming who we are. So, you know, I've thought about this with kind of the idea of the cost of time, that the cost of some things don't just cost money or effort. They cost us investing our time and waiting. And that creates the space for growth and beauty. So this last question is kind of saying, how do we live in a world of technology where technology shapes our life and our times, and also cultivate meaningful time and our meaningful experience of time? And our example of that, which is Joel showed me, and it's this song called We Used to Wait by the Arcade Fire. And I'm gonna finish, once we're done talking with this, I'll play the song for you all so you can listen to it and hear it for yourself. But I'll give a quick description and then Joel, take it away. Tell them the deep things. But the song is really, it opens up with the lines, I used to write letters. I used to sign my name. And it's kind of framed around this person who's thinking about the idea. To me, it seems like he's talking about, like, the idea of falling in love mm-hmm. pre being able to text somebody or Facebook message them, where you had to write a letter and then post that. And asking...
Wait for it to come
Yeah,
back.
And waiting for it.
Hope
and
that it made it.
Yeah, and then saying, has that... Because we don't have to wait anymore, because we don't have to wait for the letter to get there or for the letter to get one back, has that changed how we love and how we long?
Yeah.
And it kind of lives in that tension. So tell us what you think about the song, Joel.
Well, I think it's interesting because it does, you know, the album prior to this is sort of talking about how in these sort of oppressive rhythms of modernity, and especially in technology, the narrator sort of feels... like all of the space of his life is taken up. They talk about this in both like structural forms, like in the suburbs, there's shopping malls and there's houses, but there's very little nature. There's very little wildness left. There's this constant sort of return to this sense of openness and wildness and how that's sort of being lost in our world today. And he has the sense that all of these different structures, whether it's sort of the sort of urban development or whether it's technology, is intruding into his life. It's taking over all the spaces, all in the name of sort of improvement, mm-hmm. all in the name of sort of like societal advance. You know, that's supposed to be this good thing, and yet he feels utterly, almost like subsumed by it. Like he can't even find himself within it. And so...
And Emerson Putnam,
yeah,
and I think that's, it kind of goes back to the Brave New World thing, that it's made everything better, quote unquote,
yep.
everything better and faster, but that it's somehow kind of damaged or stepped on or removed the most kind of like human and important experiences, like falling in love.
Well, and interestingly enough, I can't remember if it's right before this or a couple songs before this, but in a song where he talks a little bit as a preparation to the song called Deep Blue,
mm-hmm.
it opens up saying, here in my own, under the night sky, here in my own skin, I can finally begin. Let the centuries pass me by. Tomorrow means nothing. So in this sense, you know, the timelessness isn't a bad thing. But again, it's connected to that sense of how time ought to work, mm-hmm. how it has this return to good things, mm-hmm. it can be a beautiful thing. You can experience both time and timelessness in a beautiful yeah. way. And he's lost that.
But you
that
can't
sense.
Just experience timelessness by itself.
No, not at all. He yeah. experiences it connected to nature.
Yeah.
He wants that back. So in this song, well, you know, he's talking about this sense of the suspense that drives the narrative forward. He's kind mm-hmm. of losing the narrative of his life a little bit.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is he still ends up waiting at the end of the song. Mm-hmm. But, you know, halfway through the song, he talks about how much he wants to try to return to this life of mm-hmm. waiting, of sort of like, because he recognizes that he needs something wild. He needs something yeah. unbound in his life. And he says, yeah. I think it's... let's see. I'm going to write a letter to my true love. I'm going to sign my name like a patient on a table. I want to walk again, get a move through the pain. He recognizes that like these rhythms of technology are comfortable. They're easy. Mm-hmm. And he wants something more than that. And he's willing actually to give up comfort for the sake of some sort of authentic experience. And yet, the song ends by moving into this sort of repetitive, we used to wait, we used to wait, we used to wait, now we're waiting for it, now we're waiting for it. And he talks about sort of his own experience of having people watch him as a singer on the stage. Mm. They want the chorus to come again. They're ready for that feeling.
Yeah. It's the instant gratification. I want it right now.
Yeah, and so in a certain sense, he's been so shaped by technology's rhythms mm-hmm. that now he's waiting for something to sort of like activate him back into mm-hmm. this waiting. And he can't because he's so used to the rhythms and so yeah. used to the gratification. Ooh. It's hard for him to get back to it, you know? So yeah. he's just kind of waiting for it. So the waiting, which was once a good thing, has mm-hmm. now actually become a bad thing in his yeah. life.
Huh, that's really interesting. So I think it's definitely a song worth listening to and thinking about, and thinking about how those things which are most human and most meaningful to most of us are things that require waiting, and the waiting isn't something that's... The waiting is essential to them. Like, yeah. I think that the experience of love takes time. And it just takes us to remember that... takes us to remember that, like, we are beings that are in time.
Yeah.
And that to try to escape that is kind of to do some damage or violence to who we are as people.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, returning to... back to sort of where we started. Yeah. Because we're trying to be circular here, of course, with time. You know, we talked about how the liturgical church year has these seasons like Lent in mm-hmm. which there's penitence and sort of longing, and mm-hmm. seasons like Easter where there's happiness and fulfillment. I think there's a sense in that even before technology, they still had the sense to properly wait, mm-hmm. to have a good kind of waiting. Mm-hmm. You have to be intentional about it. You have mm-hmm. to create rhythms of waiting.
Yep.
You have to sort of inculcate it in your life. Make it part of the very rhythms of your day.
Yeah. So that's something that I'm thinking about as I move into this new year,
yeah.
is thinking about how can I, you know, with a proper thankfulness for technology, because I am, I am truly thankful for technology, how can I be thankful but also be conscious about how it's shaping my experience of time? And if I am letting it rob me of those moments of humanness, of closeness, of friendship. If I'm letting in my attempt to master time, if I sometimes let it master me. And I think for me, sometimes that means that I need to step away from technology.
Yeah.
Not entirely, but to not let it shape my experience of time. And to say, okay, well, if I don't want technology to shape my experience of time, what is shaping my experience of time? Is it the church year? Is it celebrations I have with my family? Is it rhythms that I live in my life? And for me, that's been a really good thing to think through as I begin the new year, mm-hmm. is what is shaping my experience of time and how does that shape how I live? And the final thing with that is that I want to live kind of like the medievals. I think this is a good thing to live with, in the expectation, in the place of expectation of hope, that in everything we do, we are shaped by living with a sense of time being meaningful, our choices being meaningful, and knowing the shortness of our life, but also the hope. All right, so do you have any final words, Joel? Any pieces of advice?
I think that was a really wonderful way to sort of close out our conversation. And the only thing I'd add, and a practical note, is that we're coming up on the season in the church year of Lent. on Valentine's Day, actually. It's unusual for it to land on Valentine's Day, but Ash Wednesday this year will be on Valentine's Day.
And Easter on April Fool's.
Yeah.
God's joke on the devil.
That's right. And so if you are in a church that practices Lent, this will be great for you. And if you're not, you can still practice Lent on your own or with your own community or friends and family. But Lent is a season of giving something up so that you can gain something better.
Yeah, and I'm pausing there to say, like you're saying, there's a sense of giving something up so that in the space and in the time in which you would be doing or eating that thing, that instead you have time to think, to pray, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I've often wanted to sort of get to this point where I can sort of say, I'm just going to, you know, shut off my Facebook for a little bit, or I'm going to try to limit my computer use. But it's just hard to do without actual rhythms. And Lent for many years now has provided me with a rhythm in which I can say, okay, one of my fasts for this season is that I'm going to limit my Facebook use, or I'm not going to use my computer until a certain time, and I'm going to limit it to an hour or two. Whatever it may, it looks different for different people. Yeah. It's not a law or a rule. It's just a great way to sort of think about it.
Yeah. And it's a practical way to kind of reclaim some of that time.
That's right.
Also, I've done this, I think the last 3 years, to varying success, I have fasted Facebook.
Yes.
And it is always embarrassing how much I get done not being on Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't even think of myself as being that much on Facebook, but
absolutely.
It's amazing. Yeah. Not that the point of Lent and fasting is to get a lot done.
That's right.
But it might be a side effect, you know?
Don't think you Instagrammers get away. I mean, like,
no.
You know, it's, and that's me. I love my Instagram.
I think this year it might be Twitter for me, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so I'm going to, and thank you, Joel, so much for being on the show. It was so much fun.
My pleasure.
And to everyone else, know that he is generally somewhere around the background, tiptoeing as I obnoxiously do the podcast in the background.
Indeed.
But now I'm going to end the show with playing We Used to Wait by the Arcade Fire. And something I think is kind of fun that I want you to notice, because it is all about time, is notice the sound of the ticking at the very beginning, like a metronome, but really it's like a clock, reminding you of the constant ticking away of time. All right, everyone, Happy New Year, and thanks for tuning in. We'll see you soon. I used to write